time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experience them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints. Wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
This is Jordan Klein with Fireside Paranormal Podcast, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley Podcast with Al Cooley.
Welcome to Ghost in the Valley Podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Sin Schrader Hill. She is the leader of the Elk Valley Paranormal Team, and her paranormal adventures have taken her to Alcatraz, the Tower of London, the Rothenburg Dungeons, plus many other places. I'll get into my conversation with Sin Schrader Hill right after these brief messages.
Hello, this is JT, the host of The Paranormal Sun, coming to you live from Tower Studios here in Middle Earth, and you are listening to my friend Al on the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Sin Schrader Hill, welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast.
Thank you so very much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. You've led a very adventurous life. We will talk about your paranormal team, the hospital, your books, and so much more. I can't wait to pick your brain on many of these topics.
Okay.
When did you know the paranormal, life after death, was for you?
Oh, wow. You know, I didn't actually get into investigating until just the last, I guess, 15 years or so. But I knew something was going on as early as 6 years old. I couldn't explain it. I was having really bad panic attacks over it. you know, just one of those things, you just kind of grow up thinking you're different and you don't talk about it. So I never told anybody and I just kind of suffered in silence. And I have been sensitive all my life. So I've been taking on people's energy and not knowing what to do with it until over the last 15 years. It was kind of a, I wish I had known back then what I know now, but you know, you can't go back. Wish you could, because I would change a lot of things, but you learn a lot over the years.
Right. I've always said the same thing. I'm currently writing my first book.
Awesome.
On a house I grew up in that was haunted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, same thing. It's only taken me, 55 years to write this book.
And that's okay.
And growing up with people just, you know, like my mom and dad, you know, they never believed any of my stories or my sister's stories, you know, in this house we grew up. I truly do get where you're coming from on dealing with that yourself and what, you know, being called crazy or labeled crazy or seeing things that they can't see or hear.
And there's nothing you can do about it, you know, day to day. And I tell you, back then growing up, and my imagination's always been really vivid. So, of course, I would think the worst. And like, you know, I'm seeing things, I'm hearing things. Well, then I must have a tumor, you know, just because you're afraid to tell anybody because you're not seeing anything. There's nothing there. You don't see a thing. You're not hearing a thing. There's nothing there. There's nothing under your bed. You know, it's just all this kind of stuff. I remember when I was about 12 years old, that for some reason, all of a sudden, and I collected dolls all my life, dolls and stuffed animals growing up. At that point, for some reason, I had to turn all of my animals around. All the dolls had to be turned because something was watching me. I just didn't know where. I didn't know who. Something was attached to something I had in my room. We lived in a really, really old house growing up. It had been moved down the hill on logs, and it was built in the late 1800s. When it was repositioned where it is now, my mother actually still lives in it.
Oh, wow.
That it was added onto, there was a basement added, just different things like that. But whatever was in that old house, and I had a couple of ancestors die in the house. One of my ancestors that died in the house was actually my favorite bedtime story that I made my grandmother tell me. It was just, he was a funny man, but he died in that house. So I don't know exactly what was attached to my animals or the dolls or whatever, but they had to be turned around.
Because you thought they were staring at you or communicating with you?
There was something was watching me. I just didn't know which one.
And you could feel that.
Pinpoint. I had my first sleep paralysis when I was a teenager as well. It just, I think I was actually 15, 16, something like that. And it was, I don't know if you've ever had one, but it's paralyzing.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that moves are your eyes. And I didn't know what was happening. I was terrified. Of course, it was in the middle of the night. And the only thing I could do was try to focus and listen to my parents' room next door to mine to see if I could hear them breathing. And when I finally could hear them breathe, I snapped out of it. I don't know how long that was. It seemed like an eternity, but I know it didn't last more than 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I understand that because when I was in our house, you know, when I seen this, the apparition of the ghost the first night there, I'm trying to scream to my sister because my parents were gone for the evening. I was trying to scream to her in the other room. And I felt like I'm screaming, my voice is like my neck veins and everything popping out, but nothing's coming out of my mouth. You know, and I'm looking right at her, you know, the young girl. And it's like I didn't have control of getting up to run, nothing. You know, And that's really scary when you're 12 years old.
Absolutely. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. And then trying to tell your parents that when they got home. And I was always grounded. I think I might have been grounded more than any child on this planet for my ghost stories. You know, I just stopped sharing it, you know.
And see, yeah, that's what we all do. Wow.
Your Elk Valley Paranormal team. When did you form this team?
I formed it just after I had come on board with another team. It was in the back of my head that I wanted my own paranormal team anyway. And I didn't know anything about it because, you know, you see what's on TV. And of course, Zach Bagans, you know, comes to mind and how dramatic and everything, all those shows are. I wanted to have my own team to investigate. I knew something was out there. I didn't know how to investigate, but I joined a team to learn. And once I was with them for just a few months, I broke away and joined and formed my own. I already had the name. Where I live, most everything around here is called Elk Valley something or other. Uh-huh. And of course, there's been elks all through history. When the Indians were here, elks were always here. Uh-huh. So Elk Valley Paranormal came about because my specialty became finding the voices, working with the audio. And the group had this one girl that was doing it, and she would come away from an investigation with only maybe two EVPs. And I'm not knocking only two EVPs, because gosh, we've all had investigations where the night is just, excuse the pun, dead. But then we have other nights that, oh my gosh, there is like they're running around the room, jumping up and down. They're so excited to have somebody there listening to them. They all want to talk. But usually it's somewhere in between those. When I got interested in finding out how she worked with the electronic voices, it just came natural to find the EVPs for me. And then my Elk Valley Paranormal just was a spin off of the EVPs I was finding. So it was a perfect fit for me. We've not been around that long. Let's see, I think 2013 is mm-hmm. when I actually formed my group.
Yeah, that's like 9 years.
Yeah, it's not very long. Just because, you know, I didn't know how to investigate. I knew mm-hmm. I loved finding out about things, the history of things, everywhere. You know, there's history everywhere you go. And I was growing up, I was terrible in history, terrible. But now if they had talked about ghost stories, I'm pretty sure I would have been a 4.0.
Right. You know, I think it comes down to your teachers, you know, who your teacher is, of that class. I know I had some great teachers and some terrible teachers, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, you're right. You know, if you knew some of the history then, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that you know now, like say Gettysburg, you know.
Right.
If I knew then what I know now, I would have been intrigued, you know.
Absolutely.
After being at Gettysburg, you know, it is powerful, you know.
Absolutely, it is.
How many members are on your team?
Right now, I have cut way back. I have me and my co-founder, Sean Rader. And then Walt Marler is the person that is, we call him hippie. But he is so into the earth uh-huh. and knowing about Indian culture. And if he doesn't know about it, he can find out. Uh-huh. He's just one of the most down-to-earth people I've ever met in my life. And we're just blessed to have him on there. And then I have Chrissy Wolf Rumford, who is actually, she's pagan. She knows a little of this and that. She can read tarot cards. She is in a couple of my stories in the books talking about how she has worked with some pretty nasty spirits. So She's actually had to deal with nastier spirits than I do. I'm not the type that's going to go out and look for demons and anything bad. I don't want that. I don't want that. It's over my head. And if someone actually, I've never, ever, in all the investigations I've done, never had anything that I thought was demonic. I have had things that are so, playful, almost to the point of picking at you, that they're like, they want to be bad, but they're not. Those are that's the most I've ever had. Tricksters.
Right. You have ornery spirits, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't label them demons, you know.
No. I tell you, you said ornery, and that reminded me of one of my favorite EVPs I've ever gotten in my life. We were investigating a friend's house. They were having a lot of things happen. And you know how you can just kind of feel there's something with you. There's somebody around you. You can't see them maybe, but they're there. And so I was taking pictures in the house and I felt this person. I thought it was a guy, but I wasn't sure. I had no idea who he was, how old he was, anything like that. But I felt him close to me. So I said, I don't know who you are, but I'm going into the next room. Come with me. And I kept taking pictures. And when I was done in that room, I said, okay, you're still with me. So come on, let's go to the next room. And about the third or fourth time I said that, the EVP I caught later on was, I have better things to do than to follow you around all night. My favorite.
Wow. So each member of your team brings something special to the team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that just makes it a more rounded group anyway.
Right. Sounds like you're very diversified.
Yeah. And we also have worked with two or three other groups. If we get into something that is a little bit bigger than us, we're not afraid to work with somebody else. I have worked with the Bench Breaking Broads. I love them. They are spread out over Nashville, a little bit of Mississippi and Alabama. They're great girls. Love them. Done things with them. We have also worked with the Soul Seekers that are, I believe the founder is in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. They actually lost one of their guys a few years ago, and I haven't seen that much of them after Mark passed, but we actually did several things with them. So we love working with other groups. There's a couple that we tried to work with that I think wanted to know everything. And, you know, in this field, nobody knows everything. Nobody. Right. We're all learning. We're all still learning. And what we do know is just like on the head of a pin. There's so much more that it's just unfathomable to even think that you know all there is to know.
Right. I don't like labeling people as experts. You know,
exactly.
I think everybody, like myself, you know, I've been in this field for I don't know how many years, but I'm always learning. I love when I learn. I love the new things and people that come on my show, whether it be UFO, Bigfoot, or whatever. I love learning. And I think that's why I love what you said earlier. You said the history, knowing the history of the building and the history of the person. I think that's really important.
I do too. And you know, you can go in thinking you know all of the history, and then someone maybe showing you around the place gives you a new tidbit that you had never heard before. Mm-hmm. And so just always keep your ears open because you might hear something that is so important to the investigation.
I want to get into your Fayetteville Hospital.
Okay. It did not start out as a hospital. The land it is on, of course, like everywhere around us, Indians were here. And then when the settlers came in, of course, they pushed the Indians out, but the Indians were still finding artifacts all over. The hospital was built on a hill before it was a hospital. It was a school for teachers. I have some great uncles that actually went to the school and great aunts and uncles that went through this school because it was Bryson College until about 1931 or two. And then that school moved over to one of the Carolinas. That's when it became hospital instead. So they added on several different times over the years. So in fact, that this building is the most convoluted building I have ever been in my life. If I had never been in it and just walked in and tried to find my way around, you would find the main hallways. But if you got off on one of the side rooms, the lab, all the stuff back involving lab and testing and that kind of stuff, it's like a maze. And if you don't have your bearings right, you can get lost in that building. There are five basements and none of them connect. That's how many times it's actually had about three major additions added on, but five basements and none of them connect. One of them, even you can get to it. It's, of course, it's all closed right now, but you used to be able to get to it from the outside only. The other four basements, you have to be inside to get to them, except for there is another one that you can get in from both inside and outside. But this thing is incredibly confusing. That can kind of add to the investigation sometimes. It can, you know how ghosts or some spirits kind of feed off of your energy, whether it be confusion or like, I mean, just being lost in something, you're going to be a little upset. Well, they're going to feed off that and make it worse. And so there's things on in that building that can jump on you. And if you're not protected and you're not protecting yourself, it's not fun.
All right.
This is everything from nausea and headaches to people actually throwing up, people getting scratched. You got to be careful wherever you go.
Have you ever been injured?
I have never been injured. I have been jumped where I was very dizzy in there. I try to always be careful before I go in anywhere to protect myself, and white light, little meditation, little prayer, and I'm good to go. But I had to actually tell the spirit that particular night to get off me.
Wow. Yeah, I did some research on the hospitals that come back. It's very active.
Yes. Yes. You know, some of it we found were not just from patients and staff. We found that there is a couple, two or three people at least, that are remaining from when it was a college. There was a group of men, three men, that were called the Unlucky 333. And they met on Friday nights. And it said in the Bryson College book, by the light of the moon at midnight in the cemetery. And so the cemetery that they're talking about is three blocks away. So they could just walk there. Of course, back then in the 20s, most people walked a lot anyway. So it was nothing to just walk over to the cemetery. And what kind of meeting they were having, we're not sure, but the 333 kind of gives you a little idea that it wasn't on the up and up. It wasn't, let's say, a church meeting, you know, it was something dark. So two or three of these spirits are still at that hospital. They can cause some problems. They don't want you there, of course, which a lot of spirits don't want you there in any building that you're investigating. They want their space. They don't want you messing it up. They don't want you talking to them. They just want you to leave. And this hospital is crazy active, not only because whatever these guys did, the remodeling, but over the years since it closed the day before 9/11 in 2001, people had been breaking into the old hospital and trying to conjure things. The problem with that is if you're not only trying to conjure something, that's a problem, but if you don't close your investigation or you don't close if you're working with a Ouija board, which some of these people were, they didn't close it. So things were popping in and out all the time. There are several portals in that old hospital, and it's been confusion like to the max. It's a crazy place to be and very active. I've been there a couple of times where there was nothing going on, but most of the time that is the place that I have seen the most.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how haunted would you say it is?
It's definitely a 10.
Mm-hmm, that's what I read.
It is definitely a 10. And I think a lot of it is because people did not close their sessions, whether it be the spirit box, you know, at least say goodbye to close your session. Don't leave that portal open, because that's what it becomes, a portal. Things can keep popping through. When Bagans was there, something jumped off of him and stayed, and it wasn't nice, and it's still there. We don't know what it is, but you know, with all that his group does and all the places that they go, and they're into drama and they're into collecting whatever they can find that, you know, notorious, you know, it's like, I don't think they're protecting themselves. I think they are trying to pick up bad stuff and trying to see the worst of the worst. The spirits know that, and the energy around them is just crazy. It's just crazy. But anyway, something dropped off of him and has stayed, and we really don't like it.
I'm going to take a short break. I'll be right back. Rest of my conversation with Sin Schrader Hill right after these brief messages.
Have you ever felt life is a fast-moving train? It doesn't stop long enough to give you time to process what's happening. Has life thrown you some curveballs and you don't know exactly how to restart? You need a community that can relate to you. Well, you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Kathy Brooks, the host of The Kathy Brooks Show. Come discover three pillars, spirit, soul, and body, how they connect with your life experiences, and how growing in these areas can impact everything. Want to learn more? Take this journey with me. Tune in Sundays, 7 Central on Stunner Radio.
Do you hear that? Do you see that? There's more to what you see and hear in this shifted reality. I hear my guardian angel talking to me. This is Maria, and I have a guardian angel named Fija. Together, we will talk to you about the different shifted realities. Join us. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Have a peaceful day.
Okay, I'm back with Sin Schrader Hill, and I want to continue our conversation about the Fayetteville Hospital.
Okay.
Do you conduct tours there, ghost tours?
We used to. The owner has had it closed for about three to four years now, maybe a little bit longer, but he was told by the city that he had to keep it closed. Now, keep in mind, this is an old brick and concrete building, right? Not a lot left in it. It's been gutted, and they're wanting him to put a sprinkler system in it so we can have tours.
So okay.
It's kind of, what are you going to do? You got to play by the city rules, mm-hmm. but it's just, he's kind of stuck right now. So in other words, there are still no investigations, public or private, going on. I haven't been back in the hospital in quite a while myself. And I just imagine that whenever someone does go back in, they'll be kind of excited to see somebody, but it's going to be a while. He's got to clear out all the asbestos tile. And last I talked to him, he was still working on that. He's had to close up all the windows and the doors to keep people from breaking in, you know, just thrill seekers, all ages, trying just to see what they can find out. He's had more trouble with that, I think, and the city than anything. So in other words, hopefully one day we'll have those tours again.
Well, yeah, really, because I just read that, you know, you were closely affiliated with the Fayetteville Hospital. So I was, curious.
We were actually the group that took the people around for the tours. I was booking teams from all over the country, and we even had a group from Ireland reach out to us, wanting to come over and see the old hospital and go through it. But again, he has all of the investigations, public and private, on hold right now. Hopefully one day we can do it again.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Where is Fayetteville actually located?
We are 2 hours south of Nashville, 30 minutes north of Huntsville, Alabama, right in the middle of the state of Tennessee, right down at the bottom of it in the middle. It's the county that looks like a little house with a chimney.
Well, I didn't know if it was still operational for giving tours.
No, not at this time. The only thing that is allowed right now is photographing around the grounds, just outside, but that's kind of sad too. If the city would work with us, we could get so many people through here. And we did there for a while. We had people coming in from California, upstate New York, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, people coming from all over the country just to go through that hospital. And they were getting a lot of information during their investigations.
Now, you said that you have been rescued a few times over the past few years from dangerous situations. What would those be?
Two of them were wrecks. I cannot explain to you how I didn't get hurt or leave this world, honestly. The first wreck that was really bad, I was going to meet my college roommate at a country western bar. And this was, gosh, back in 80, long time ago. I'm telling you my age, aren't I? Let's see, back in the mid 80s. So I was going to meet her at the bar. I was in a place I had not been before. And, you know, when you are in your early 20s, you think you know everything. Uh-huh. And you don't know anything, but you think you do. So at that time, of course, I was a speed demon on the road and took a couple of curves too fast. I remember time slowing down, me going straight for some trees. I lost control of the car around the curb and tried to overcorrect. I tried to correct it, but ended up overcorrecting it and then came to rest between two big trees, right in the middle. I could barely squeeze out of the door because I was almost wedged between two trees.
Oh, wow.
The thing is, when the cops got there, and I had to walk and get picked up back then. So anyway, when my friend and the cops finally got there, they pulled me over to the side and said, looked me over and they said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I'm fine. I've got no scratch on me." And they just looked at each other. And I thought, what's wrong? I don't understand why they're acting weird. And one of the cops kind of came up to me. He said, "You're sure you're okay?" And I said, "I'm positive. I'm fine." And he said, "You are a lucky girl."
Sounds like your guardian angels were protecting you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, everyone else that has had a wreck right here has gone off on the right-hand side of the road instead of the left, like you did. The right-hand side was a steep drop-off into water, and no one has lived going over that side.
Wow, that's amazing.
So that was the first one. The second one was when I was doing home health physical therapy, and I had just called my patient and said, "I'll be there in an hour," and got in my car and left, got up on I-65, headed north toward Columbia. And it was going to take me from when I got to I-65, it was going to take me another 30 minutes or so to get to his house. He knew I was coming. I called him. I hadn't been on the interstate more than 5 minutes. It was a sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. That was what was so weird. And all of a sudden, rain started coming down. I had my Jeep in cruise control at the time. Actually, it was not a Jeep. I had a little cruiser. It was in cruise control. When the bottom dropped out, it lifted my car up, was pushing me toward the 18-wheeler on my right, but then it pushed me away from the 18-wheeler down into the median where I spun around 360s. And I actually saw the people in the southbound lane, and they were helpless as I was. There's nothing they could have done. I was headed right for them. All I could do was pray. The only thing that was coming out of my mind, because I had no control on that car, I felt somebody with me, but I don't know who it was. Only thing I could say was, help me, Lord, help me, Lord. And when I finally came to a stop after doing the 360s in the median and seeing those people's faces, and I mean, it was a busy day on the interstate at that point, I came to rest rolling backwards. It was about just a few feet from a drop off that was an underpass. You know, how did that happen? How did that happen? And when I came to rest, the only thing I knew to say was, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. And I must have said that a million times. Uh-huh. But I called my patient and I said, Mr. So-and-so, I've just had an accident. I'm okay. My car's okay, but I can't see you today. I'm too shaken up. I'm going home. And when I drove to my mom's house, I remember just walking in and her saying, why are you here? What are you doing home? And I said, I just need a hug. Just give me a hug.
Yeah, right.
And I told her what had happened. And I swear somebody was in that car with me. I've been told it wasn't my dad. I thought it was my dad, but I've been told it was an angel, in fact.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. Had your guardian angels with protecting you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with me praying as hard as I was. Right. But I had, again, not a scratch on me. My car, not a scratch on my car. I can't even imagine if it had gone the other way. You know, something else had happened, but it didn't. And I'm here to tell the stories about it.
That's great. I see that you also help out other paranormal teams and the law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. I've only helped one particular law enforcement person. His family members were having problems. They had gotten mixed up in bad situations as far as paranormal investigating, and things had jumped into their lives and on them. And she was seeing things, and they were the spirits she was seeing. She was the only one that was seeing them, but she was seeing them all the time, and they were tormenting her, basically driving her crazy because no one would believe her. And her brother had reached out to me after I talked to this girl. She sent me several messages and several camera views and the audio that came with it. And I deciphered them and found that they were indeed targeting her. They were trying to drive her crazy and push her to pretty much take her own life. And she was telling everybody this, but they weren't believing her. So when I came up with some actual voices and what they were saying and sent them to her, she had someone finally believing her. She took them to her brother, who was a cop. He called me within 24 hours and he said, are you for real? And I said, I found what I found. I have been doing this for a little while. And he said, you are the only person that has been able to verify anything that she's saying. And by verify, I mean having voices that are telling me the same thing that she's saying they're telling me. Mm-hmm. And she said, and he said, I feel bad now for not listening to her, but I don't know what to do. So anyway, it was just a bad situation all the way around. But he wanted me to come down, and it was too far to go, actually, to get on the road and go. But I told him I would find him another group, and I did, to help her clear out as much as they could. So I've not heard anything else from her or him. So I'm hoping that everything turned out okay.
And I see that your love of the paranormal has taken you to Gettysburg, Alcatraz, Tower of London, the Rothenburg Dungeons, plus many other places. I mean, you've been around.
I love traveling. And, you know, now it's kind of hard because of everything going on, but I've just loved going to different places. Even Biltmore has some creepy things going on. I've been to the Alamo. I've been to Goliad State Park in Texas. A lot of things going on at all these different places. One of my big stories, I think, was my ghost cat that actually left with someone I brought back from Valley Forge without knowing it. We were in Pennsylvania with my husband, or it was my visiting my husband's family. We came down through Pittsburgh and I got sick. I got just very sick, food poisoning, not feeling good, not a great thing to have on any trip. Kind of suffered for 24 hours. And the next day we had gone from Pittsburgh into Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and then on into Valley Forge. And when we got to Valley Forge, I was still feeling icky. Just, you know, it was hot. That made it worse. It made you more nauseous. So any air condition I could find, I would sit down. I went straight to the visitor center. It's like, let me find an air conditioner and just sit here for a minute and try to calm down. And that's what I did. We ended up not being able to stay too long because I didn't feel good. So anyway, we left Valley Forge and went on to Philly. That next day in Philly, I was perfectly fine. I had not even a headache, no nausea. I was able to eat a Philly cheesesteak, you know, just having fun in the city. My husband had from Pennsylvania had never actually been to Philly, and I'd been there about three times. So I got to show him around his own home state, right, which was fun, but I was feeling good. And so from there, we came back to Tennessee through Shenandoah National Park, through Virginia, and then hit East Tennessee and came on into Middle Tennessee. I was fine the rest of the trip. When we got home, I noticed that something was going on. There was something else with us, and I didn't know who or what it was, but it was new. The cat now I had found when I first married my husband and moved into his home. The cat would be jumping up on the bed, and I had not moved my cat in yet. So I remember falling asleep and feeling the cat jump up on the bed. And I was like, oh, that's Bella. She's snuggling next to my feet. And then my eyes popped open because I had not moved Bella in yet. And that's when I realized we had a ghost cat. So about 2 or 3 days later, it happened again, and Greg hadn't fallen asleep yet. And I said, did you feel that? And he said, I did. I said, when were you going to tell me about that? And he said, I was waiting to see if you would notice something. And I said, you know what it is? And he said, no. I said, we have a ghost cat. So the ghost cat stayed. When we come back from vacation, I noticed that we've got something else here, but I don't know who it is. And I asked questions, did a little investigation of my own around here. And anyway, I found out that a sweet nurse from the Valley Forge area had latched onto me because I was sick, and she was taking care of me, making me feel better. So within that 24 hours, I was fine. And she decided to come all the way back to Tennessee with us. Once she got here, I found out a little bit about her and was just amazed that someone had felt the need to help me. I thought that was so sweet. Mm-hmm. And she ended up staying about 3 months. I asked my friend Mark, who is a psychic. He also does the illustrations on my books. He is an amazing artist and paranormal investigator and medium. He's just wonderful. So I always reach out to him with questions I have, and I ask him what to do about this nurse. I didn't want her to think she had to stay. And he said, no, he said, just thank her and wish her on her way. And I did. She left just really soon after that. It was about a week later, I realized the cat wasn't there either. So they had bonded and she had taken the cat with her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to get into the you said mentioning about your books. Mm-hmm. You are an author as well. And mm-hmm. your latest book, They're Speaking, Are You Listening? My Most Compelling EVPs. Tell us about your latest book.
Okay. That one was actually supposed to be my first one, but I could not quite figure out how I wanted to do it. It was the investigations I have been on that I've gotten the best EVPs. I wanted people to be able to actually listen to them, understand what the story was about as they were reading it. So what I decided to do was load all of the EVPs onto valleyparanormal.com in the evidence section. Uh-huh. And you can actually go to the menu pull down to their speaking. And as you go through the book, when you come to an EVP, you can go to that evidence section and actually listen to each EVP.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, I finally figured that out, but that was supposed to be my first book.
So like if you went to Amazon or Kindle to get your books, uh-huh. is there a certain order you have to read them in? Or?
Oh, no. No, no, no. They're all three totally different books. The first book, Whispers in the Dark, that is 23. They're all short stories. I just write short stories. Uh-huh. That book has 23 short stories. There are two involving Lynchburg, where Jack Daniels is made. Uh-huh. There's a Lynchburg haunted home, and those stories are there. There is also, when I lived in Arizona, a story from there. When I went to Helen, Georgia for a holiday, I got rushed there at the cabin, so we had to sage it. That story is in there. Most of the stories, there's a couple about Chrissy and some of the things that she's had to do before she joined Elk Valley Paranormal when she was in South Carolina. So those are kind of creepy stories, hers. The rest of them are here in Lincoln County, and it's my team or myself that it's happened to. There's a couple of stories about the hospital in that book. One was Time Warp, where three of my team members actually were together on this public ghost tour going through it. And all three of them had a different experience. It was a time warp or, a time slip. And all three of them experienced something different on that second floor of the hospital. So that's a cool story. The third book, again, is all of my investigations personally and the electronic voice phenomena I found and that you can go back and listen to. The second book was a fiction book that Mark and I decided to just try, just to see if we could write some fiction. So that mm-hmm. was fun. I'm working on my fourth book right now, and it is called It's Not Goodbye, Signs from Beyond. And I'm still collecting some stories if people want to send them in. I've had about 48 people send me stories in for this book, and it's incredible. Some of the stories that I've gotten are just so uplifting. And then you'll have a near-death experience that is just terrifying. So it just runs the spectrum. It's about how our loved ones send signs to us, whether it be leaving a coin or a bird, you know, a butterfly, anything like that, to hearing a special song that comes on immediately on the radio when you need it the most. Seeing a picture of a loved one, things like that. It's also about deathbed visits. Like when my grandmother was dying, she saw her mother and father and her cousins. So they had come back to help her transition. Near-death experiences are in there. And then pets, that come back and let us know that they're around. So this book has been in, I have been trying to work on this one since 2019. I lost my motivation in 2020. It carried on through 2021. And then I finally got my motivation back when my good friend Valerie at Young Vintage Antiques here in town, she helps me smudge houses sometimes. So she's my buddy. I went up to her and she said, you know, you need to get that out. And yeah, I know, I'm trying. So I got my motivation back in March of 2020. Unfortunately, the very next month, the unimaginable happened. I don't have any children myself. I've got cats. Uh-huh. But my sister has a son, Wyatt, and uh-huh. he was my mini-me. He did everything with me. He went on investigations. He liked dancing like I do. He was just my person. And the things that my husband didn't want to do, he would go with me to do. He helped me with all the book signings. He went to all the cemetery walks that I would play a character. He was always there with me.
That's cool.
He was 19 and a half, and we lost him.
Oh, wow.
On April the 6th. And so there went my motivation again. Since his death, he has reached out in more ways than I can tell you right now. Uh-huh. It's just, it's amazing. I'm still, I'm not tearing up so bad right now, but there's just been, like this past week, nothing but crying spells because he was my person.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, after, I guess, about 3 weeks after his death, I came to realize that the reason I lost my motivation was because this book needed to be slowed down so I could dedicate it to him and write his story. And so that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's sweet of you to do that, especially in being there for you almost all the time.
Yeah.
Being your right-hand man, so to speak, you know, and your sister's son, your nephew, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's an honor to him, you doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I had no kids, so he was my baby. And I always thank Susan, my sister, for having him for me. He was a miracle child. He was not supposed to even be here. She had 5 miscarriages, and the doctors had told her she would never, ever carry a baby to term. And so when she got pregnant with him, it was a miracle. And then when he actually came through the full pregnancy term, it was another miracle.
Right.
So when he was born, we were just so excited. He's the only grandson. He's, you know, the only nephew,
uh-huh.
her only son. And then to lose that, you just, you know, your heart is not there anymore. It's uh-huh. just an empty place where he took it with him.
Yeah, I feel for your sister. Yeah. I couldn't imagine, you know, a parent losing a child.
No, it's been awful for her. Awful. And for my mother as well, because that was her only grandson. And he was born a year after my dad died. So he kind of saved my mom from that deep depression she had gotten into after losing my dad. You know, they were married for 40-something years.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and then Wyatt was born a year later. So he saved her from that deep depression. And now he's gone. And we're having a tough time getting over it. But anyway, this fourth book is going to be dedicated to Wyatt.
That's sweet. Tell us about a photo you have taken of a spirit feeding off of a Ouija board.
Right. It is the book by Till Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Shades of Angels by Till Gray. That I was at the Lynchburg Haunted Home with several of my buddies. And Mark was actually there, the psychic. He was there. Walt was there. This was before Walt actually joined my group. Sean and I were there. And then a few others, the ones that were actually keeping the place up and running for investigations. Adam Head and his wife. Callie, they were keeping the place running for the owner. So we had this big investigation going, And for some reason, Mark came up while he was talking. He had gone into a trance. And he said, there's an open Ouija board, which floored Adam and Callie because they hadn't told anybody. And yes, there was a Ouija board. And they asked him where it was, and he just pointed in the direction. So they went upstairs and got it. They hid it again and asked him where it was. And he was able to tell them exactly where they had moved it. So they were just testing his psychic abilities, which he came through with flying colors. But after that part was over, we took a break, and I wanted to get an up-close look at the Ouija board. It was a 19, I can't remember if it was a 1920s or a 1930s board. It was a very old board. And whoever had used it last had just not closed it. So I took a picture, a couple of pictures, two or three. I'm always taking two or three because, you know, you want to take two or three in the same position. That way, if you catch something and it's not in the next picture or the picture prior, you can say, well, maybe I do have something that's supernatural here. You can't say for sure, but this particular photo I caught was compelling enough that when I showed it to Mark, I said, Mark, something, I don't understand what this photo is. And he took one look at it and he said, oh my God, you have caught an actual spirit feeding off this board. You can see the cord that it has been feeding, the part of the cord that has been, is getting its nutrient, I guess, is what you can say, the energy from the board. That part is red. And then the spirit is trying to get away from me because it knows I'm taking a picture of it. And it's, you can actually see that, go to the evidence on elkvalleyparanormal.com and see the picture as well. It's just picture of the board. You can see mine and Sean's feet and the spirit feeding off of this Ouija board.
That's wild. I've seen on your, on one of your sites, you listed an event in my family's neck of the woods, Huntsville, Alabama. My complete coolie side is from Muscle Shoals, you know, Sheffield, Huntsville, a celebration of light workers.
Yeah.
This event will take place on October 15th, which will be happening a few days after this, episode is aired. Tell us about that.
I know it is a group of people in the Huntsville area that I'm actually not a part of that.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No, I'm not a part of that. I'm interested in going because they're so close. They're actually in Huntsville where they, where they're going to have that, I believe. And they've got people that come in, they can do digital reading of the aura. They can give you a printout of what your aura looks like. They can do different things like that. So it's just an interesting, you know, you can go and learn something more about yourself and others around you. So I think it's really a cool thing.
Any other events you have planned for the rest of this year?
I have another book signing coming up in Lebanon. It is a really cool book signing that it's a Paracon and it's Pause for the Cause. So they're actually collecting money for an historical building in the Lebanon area. It might actually be a different city that they're collecting money for, but the Paracon is in Lebanon, Tennessee. And they're also having that same day while the Paracon is going on, they're trying to help shelter pets get adopted. So me and animals, I was just like, that's the perfect Paracon for me. I'm going up, I'm going to help the animals. I'm going to try to sell some books. And
what day is that on?
That is going to be on the, it's the Saturday in October. I believe it's the 13th of October.
Okay. We'll push that for Saturday. For that release.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Ghost Biker Miranda Young for connecting
us. She's awesome.
Isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's awesome. Yeah.
I just loved her. She's great.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I've enjoyed talking to you. Would love to do it again on or off the podcast. So just stay in touch with me.
Yes. Give me a shout out when your new book is going to be released. We'll get you back on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can get my books on Amazon. Just look for Sin Schrader Hill, and they're in paperback and Kindle versions.
I will put those links at the bottom of this episode.
Perfect.
Thank you, Sin Schrader Hill, for being on my show. And please check out Sin's links at the bottom of this episode. And I will see you in 2 more weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.